the landscape has changed so quickly. COVID in particular really made clear, I think, to many, many parents, the need for educational options.
The year 2021 might very well be known as the year of the parent. Parents are waking up to our rights and responsibilities as primary educators to our children. We're getting more involved, voicing our concerns at school board meetings, flexing our muscles in the voting booth. On this episode of Religious Freedom Matters, we'll explore the trend towards greater mobility for parents to find the right educational fit for their children, and tips for strengthening our Catholic schools to be authentic witnesses to the faith and places of learning and formation for their students. I'm your host, Andrea Pachotti Bayer, Director of the Conscience Project. My co-host is Joan Desmond, Senior Editor at the National Catholic Register. On this episode, Joan and I will be talking with noted legal scholar, Notre Dame Law School's Nicole Garnett, about positive trends at the Supreme Court for religious freedom and school choice. I'll then touch base with Mike Ortner, a Catholic father with a passion for renewing Catholic education. To offer important insight and expertise, Joan and I have invited Notre Dame Law Professor Nicole Garnett to join us. Nicole's teaching and research focuses on education policy. Nicole serves as a fellow of the Institute for Educational Initiatives and the De Nicola Center for Ethics and Culture. She's also the senior policy advisor for the Alliance for Catholic Education, a program engaged in a wide array of efforts to strengthen and sustain K-12 Catholic schools. Welcome to Religious Freedom Matters, Nicole.
Thanks so much for having me.
Nicole, your legal expertise is amazing, including having clerked for one of my favorite justices on the Supreme Court, and it's hard, their numbers keep increasing, with Justice Clarence Thomas. I'd like to start our conversation off discussing an important religious freedom and school choice case that's being reviewed by the Supreme Court as we speak. The case is Carson versus Macon, and it involves a tuition assistant program in Maine that allows students living in areas without a public secondary school for study at public or private schools, so long as they are not, quote, sectarian. Tell us about what you think is going to happen in Carson and why you think it's important for school choice and the likelihood that the court will rule in the favor of the parents being able to choose schools that offer religious education to their students.
So this case basically asks the question whether or not the Free Exercise Clause, the Protection of Religious Liberty, prohibits the state of Maine from excluding schools, or excluding families from choosing schools only because they are, quote unquote, sectarian. It actually became quite clear that what that means to the state is that they exclude schools because they're too religious, they take their faith too seriously. So in Maine, you can get this money, effectively a voucher. You can go to an elite prep school in another state or another country, but you can't go to your Catholic parish school down the street. It did seem our oral argument, the tea leaves were definitely, I would read them in favor of the parents in the case. The justices seemed very, very skeptical. At least a majority of the justices seemed quite skeptical of this discrimination against religious schools and not at all convinced by the arguments that the state made. And in fact, what was really interesting to me listening to the argument was the justices kept pushing, well, are you discriminating among religions? Does this program disadvantage some families, perhaps Catholic families and Jewish families for whom religious instruction in a school is important versus, you know, the state at one point said, well, you can send your kids to Sunday school. And Justice Gorsuch said, well, that just benefits Protestants. So it was a very interesting argument. So I suspect that the plaintiffs will prevail. And why does this matter? It matters a lot for the school choice movement. 31 states now have a parental choice program that enables some kids to use public resources to attend a private or faith-based school. Only two of those programs exclude religious schools: Maine, the case before the Supreme Court, and Vermont, which has an identical program, which is good news for families, especially because we know from what parents say about why they choose schools, especially in school choice programs, faith is a really important factor that influences their decisions about where to choose where to send their kids in a parental choice program, faith, moral formation, school character, those kinds of intangibles that are so important to people of faith and many, many parents. So it would be great to have the Supreme Court make clear that the states, the government can't exclude schools just because they're religious, because that would, allowing them to do so really takes the takes an option off the table that many parents would choose if given the opportunity.
Nicole, what do you think are the best programs out there state-wise?
So the landscape has changed so quickly. COVID in particular really made clear, I think, to many, many parents, the need for educational options. So this has been called the year of school choice, the most successful year in school choice, the school choice movement's history. 21 programs were enacted or expanded this year. Three states came into the world of school choice, Kentucky, Missouri, and West Virginia. And I say that because the programs in those three states are new, a new mechanism called education savings accounts. We don't know yet how they'll work, but they're kind of an ideal model because in theory, what they allow parents to do is take the money that would otherwise be spent on their kids' education in the public school and spend it however they want, public school, homeschool, tutoring, even if you can go to a public school part-time and private school part-time, it's a lot of flexibility. But those programs are fairly new. So we have to wait and see how they work. Of the programs on the books today, the private school choice programs, I think the two best programs are the Florida Scholarship Tax Credit Program, which is the largest program in the country, which just works really well and has transformed a lot of lives, and the voucher program in my home state of Indiana, which was expanded this year to include well into the middle class. Now, children will be able to take the scholarship that's provided by the state and go to a private school. In my kids' Catholic school, for example, about a third of kids participate in the voucher program. And I would say after the expansion comes on board, it will be much closer to half. So that's just a really great opportunity for kids to be able to attend a school that best suits their needs. If we think about school choice and what's at stake in Carson, one of the things to keep in mind is all the literature suggests that faith-based schools, and particularly Catholic schools, really transform the lives of the least among us. So there is this long evidence of a quote-unquote Catholic school effect. If you attend a Catholic school, you're more likely to not just do better on tests, but graduate from high school, go to college, stay in college, and live productive lives. And that's sort of what our schools have always been about. And you can see it in, because I live in a state with vouchers, a very good program. I can see kids in my my own children's school whose lives have been transformed and the schools have been transformed by this program. Just think about the fact there's several schools on the west side of South Bend that are predominantly Mexican American, where almost all kids now get a scholarship. They go now to the Catholic high school that my kids have attended. And the school, it went from being maybe 10% Latino, my daughter, who's now a senior at Notre Dame, her freshman year in high school, to being 25% within 2 years when my son was a freshman in high school. And those are just families that would perhaps otherwise have no options than send their kids to schools that wouldn't serve them well. And now they're getting this not only elite education, but this really a faith-filled education with great college counseling and honors classes. So they're really putting them on the path to success. So it was really cool for me as a mom, and not just as an advocate and a scholar, to see the way that program was able to transform lives, but also transform and enrich the environment that my children were in as students at a Catholic high school.
You know, Nicole, I also want to say, we sometimes when we think of school choice, we really do focus on the needy students. And we see like our Catholic schools have definitely been responding to the needs of low-income and minority students, especially in urban areas. But there's this transformational effect of good education that goes beyond the student and really does support the family. And I can say, you know, as a Catholic mom with a number of kids in education, both at a Christian liberal arts school and at our parish-based school, when the schools respond to the family is stronger. And friends, I've seen their marriages are strengthened because of the stability offered in the schools that their children are attending and the supports and the commitment to supporting the family system as well. And recognizing that parents were primary educators, and when our families are thriving, our children are thriving as students. I wanted to also put out a plug. I'm in Virginia, and we have a school initiative, school choice initiative that allows parents to make contributions that are state income tax free to a 529 fund and use that money for elementary and secondary religious schools. And it came on my radar because my parish priest talked about it and put it in the bulletin saying, hey guys, look, this is what's being offered in the Commonwealth. It's a great opportunity to save a little bit of money. It's not tons, but every little dollar counts, especially when you're the mother of a large family. And it really does allow for that creativity and for people to be able to make the sacrifice, because this is always going to be a sacrifice when you're choosing free versus something more than free. Right. But we know that oftentimes the quality is far beyond any dollars that we're paying.
I think that's so true. I'm a Catholic convert and a public school kid and a Catholic school mom. And I just, my life and our family was transformed. My husband and I, neither of us had the opportunity to attend Catholic school. We're actually both converts, although he converted when he was seven, so he doesn't really count. But it was so true.
Every day is a conversion, Nicole.
Every day. We had such a transformational experience being at our grade school where our kids have attended. We have a third grader there, and our oldest daughter, who attended the Catholic grade school, the parish school, and then the Catholic high school, is a senior at Notre Dame and is seriously discerning a religious vocation with the Sisters of Life. And I think that it transformed our lives, but I think it really just see what I think, but for the path that we put her on and that school, Little St. Joseph grade school put her on, maybe she wouldn't have been as open as she is to this unique, distinctive call in her life. And that little school almost closed 25 years ago. So, but for the grace of God and good people who believed in it, maybe we would have had a very different family experience. So I'm grateful to God for Catholic schools, and I'm grateful for the programs that provide opportunities for families to participate in them who might not otherwise.
So Nicole, one thing that's come up is the idea that school choice was supposed to promote this healthy competition to the public system. And perhaps the most extreme example was during the lockdown, when Catholic schools were open and many public systems weren't. How successful has that idea been of healthy competition?
Well, obviously, one of the reasons I think that school choice is so ascendant right now is the COVID experience. Catholic schools, faith-based schools, private schools adjusted to safely open when public schools did not. And I think that was, it really has spurred an expansion of school choice. But, you know, at the literature suggests, and this is often, it's really interesting because often people, opponents of school choice say, well, you're taking money away from the public schools and you're going to hurt the kids who are behind. And, you know, the evidence suggests actually is the opposite. The one thing we know most about school choice is that it tends to improve the outcomes for private schools and public schools. So competition works. There's actually decades of literature suggesting in both competition from charter schools and competition from private school choice that when choice becomes a reality for families in a school district, the public schools get better. And this is, no one talks about this, but it does, in fact, the rising tide lifts all boats. It's actually good to give people options. It incentivizes performance across the board.
Well, it'll be great to see if that happens now. I'm seeing rising numbers in parochial private education in general. So it would be great to see whether that does impact the public system to address issues of academic competency and related stuff.
Now, Nicole, we're expecting the Supreme Court to decide the Carson case probably at the end of the term in June, maybe before, you never know, but most likely at the end of the school year and at the end of the Supreme Court's term as well. It does, I think we're always worried about not, you know, trying to make predictions, but with this Supreme Court in particular, we've seen pro-religious freedom, pro-school choice, and I do think there's a great hope in Carson coming out in favor of parents, and not just limited to parents in Maine, but for parents across the country. So many thanks to Notre Dame Law Professor Nicole Garnett for joining us. Pay attention to Nicole. She is a rising star, very well noted and a recognized scholar, and someone whose voice is always being sought after in these important discussions. And again, it's been our treat to have you on Religious Freedom Matters, our education series.
Thank you so much. And my prayers, appreciate prayers for Carson and the court making the right decision. It's a special case for me because I actually was the first lawyer who challenged this program in 1997. So it's been a part of my life for a very long time. It is a very pro-religious liberty court. So we have reason to hope.
Yeah. Amen. Thank you. Thank you, Nicole. And thanks for all of us who support school choice to see an advocate like you get their day in court, in a sense.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Coming up next, I'll be speaking with Mike Ortner, Catholic father of six and founder of the Ortner Family Foundation. Mike will share what he's doing to help parents, teachers, and Catholic school administrators be part of the renewal of Catholic education in America. Joining me now is Mike Ortner. Mike and his wife Liz are parents to six school-age children. They've been a long-time homeschooling family, with their three youngest still learning at home, and their eldest three at a classical liberal arts school in the Washington, D.C. area. Mike and Liz also founded the Ortner Family Foundation. Its mission is to serve the Catholic Church, the classical liberal education movement, and other endeavors that lead to human flourishing. Thanks for joining me, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. It's great to be with you.
Mike, you and Liz are committed to your Catholic faith and really involved in your children's education. Why have you chosen to focus a lot of the work of your foundation on renewing Catholic education?
Thanks, Andrew. Two main reasons. Number one, it needs renewal. This is sort of a good news, bad news story. The bad news is the Catholic schools have taken a beating over the last 60 years. Enrollment is down from 5.5 million in 1965 to 1.6 million today. So Catholic schools are suffering, so they need help. The good news is there is a huge renewal movement underway that's been going on for the last, say, 20 years or so in Catholic schools. So we'd like to help ignite that and help other schools to adopt that. So that's the first reason. And the second reason is we're involved with education because we believe outside of the family that schools and education in general are the best tried and true path to success for kids. And when I say success, I don't mean just material success or money or career, although that's part of it. I mean, from a Catholic perspective, virtue, wisdom, holiness, all of those good things.
Well, and it's great that you talk about how they're complementary. I mean, these work together. We want our kids to be able to use their talents, and we also want our kids to be able to desire heaven and order their life and their study with that kind of direction and that viewpoint. And you also give me a perfect segue. One of the initiatives that you've been sponsoring is just recently launched, and it is called the Catholic School Playbook. What is it, and how do you think it can help Catholic schools facing today's challenges?
So Catholic School Playbook is basically a series of interviews that we did with all of the great Catholic schools that have been able to buck the trend and have great success, both in terms of enrollment, as well as in being authentically Catholic and in offering a great education. So we've interviewed all the school leaders, or at least school leaders for many of those schools, and we're still looking to interview more. And we've pulled together all of these interviews and distilled them into basically a list of best practices, a playbook that really any school could follow. And what we found is that while it is hard work, it's challenging to run a great Catholic school, it's not complicated. So we've, in all the interviews, there are very, very much common themes that we've uncovered that run across all of these schools. And we wanted to create a resource that was freely available to anyone, especially pastors, Catholic superintendents, Catholic school leaders. We wanted to give them a resource that's freely available that can basically give them all of the secrets to success that all these other great Catholic schools have uncovered over the last 10 or 20 years and make it really as obvious to them as we possibly could. So that's why we've done it.
No, it's really great. And I would highly encourage everyone to look at, just Google Catholic School Playbook. One of the blog entries, one of the recent blog entries on the playbook right now is got a fantastic title, The 21 Things Super Successful Catholic Schools Do Differently. And why I say it's fantastic is anytime a title says super, I love it. We can't go through all 21, but a couple of those things, they did jump out and they caught my eye. And I wanted to highlight those for our listeners and really get a sense from you of why you think that those are important. The first and foremost was daily mass. It's very easy with the struggle to make sure that we're touching all the bases academically to forget at our Catholic schools the treasure that we have in the liturgy and the central point that the daily mass can be in our Catholic schools. Do you see that as a trend that people are coming back to the mass and that Catholic schools are really seeing that as being kind of a foundational part of the education that they're offering?
We do. In fact, for that point, one of the interviews that we did really stands out. It was with Rosemary Vanderweel from Lourdes School out in Colorado. She took over the school, gosh, I don't know, 10 years ago. And they went from doing it, I think they, before she came on board, they did a weekly mass. And I think she moved it to 4 days, 4 or 5 days. And they actually lost some families, which you would almost expect if you're at a typical Catholic school where you've got a lot of parents who are nominal Catholics, maybe somewhat practicing, but not super passionate about their faith. Well, they lost some families when that was announced, maybe a couple dozen. But then they got like twice as many families after that to fill in the gap and more. So you do end up losing families when you focus in on the faith, such as having mass every day. But then what she found is they started getting families come in that were even further away who wanted to then attend their school because they saw the beauty of that. Parents want their kids to grow up strong in the faith and understanding the mass and being a participant in it. And starting the day with mass is a beautiful way for anyone to start their day. And what the parents who remained there, what they found was that their children were saying how much they loved mass as part of their day. You hear these sorts of things in the interviews, and it's beautiful to hear this. And we underestimate our children. And to see that play out is great.
Well, Mike, I think you're right. I've noticed even in my own parish, when the school children are there, it's reinvigorating to the parish community as well. And you see that the children are doing an evangelizing activity with their families and with people in their community. It's really making a bridge between the school and the parish community that sometimes has been broken over years of disaffection or kind of downplaying the importance of mass in the school day. You also make a really good point in that blog post about recruitment efforts. And it really came home for me. It said that student recruitment efforts should focus on Catholics who take their faith seriously. We definitely want to throw the net wide, especially now in the pandemic, when a lot of families aren't being served by their local public schools. But I truly believe that families that are serious and on fire about their Catholic faith are important families to have in our parish schools. How has that played out in these thriving schools? Have you seen these strong families being an important part of the school community?
Absolutely. And so my background is in the business world, and they're very much stealing a page from the playbook of most businesses, especially when you're startups. You have to be very focused in who your target market is and serve the segment of the market who is going to most value your product or service. So when you apply that principle to Catholic schools, if you're running a Catholic school, you definitely want to be targeting the families who take their faith seriously. First and foremost, they are going to be the backbone, the foundation of the success of your school. And you have to reach them first and serve them well. And once you're serving them well, that affords you the opportunity to branch out and serve, whether it's more nominal Catholics who don't know their faith as well, or Protestants, or even non-Christians. And we see this, the great Catholic schools will serve these other segments, but you have to have your core segment taken care of, number one. And that will allow you to go out and serve these other segments as well. But the key thing to serve these other segments well is they at least have to buy into the mission of what you're trying to accomplish. So if they don't buy into your mission, then they probably won't be a good fit. But there will be non-practicing Catholics or Protestants or non-Christians. There will be some who look at what you're doing and buy into it. They see the beauty in it and want to be part of this community. And those are the ones that I think you can branch out to after you have your core group of Catholics who are the foundation of your school.
Now, Mike, the word that was running through most of your answer was one of service. And one of the other points that you point out in the blog is the importance of servant leaders running Catholic schools. This isn't another job. This is an act of service. This is a contribution to not only families, but to the greater church. Have you seen the success turn on whether the head, the lead of a school, whether it's a headmaster or a principal or whatever we're calling people these days, really having that spirit of service to the community, to the families, and to the children?
100%. So let me give you a specific example of that. So Peter Crawford runs St. Jerome Institute, which is basically a startup Catholic high school in Washington, D.C. So in terms of servant leadership, so let me talk about how they do teacher training. So there's actually many aspects to it, but I'll provide you the point that drives this point home. So he shadows every new teacher at the school. He'll shadow them. He aims for once a week. He'll shadow them in the classroom. When they're beyond their first year, he'll shadow them every other week and give them specific feedback and coaching on how well they're running their classroom and how well they're running their seminar. In addition to that, he'll invite the teachers to come watch him in the classroom, watch him teach, and he will ask them for feedback after they watch him. So this whole idea of servant leadership should infect every part of what a teacher does, especially the most important aspect of a school leader, which is training, recruiting and training the right teachers.
Absolutely. And living and showing that important virtue of humility, clearly. It's incredible how virtue is contagious. And if we show it and live it, not only the people around us, but if we're teaching the students as well and the children really look to that virtuous leadership. Now, earlier in this episode, I spoke with Notre Dame Law Professor Nicole Garnett about an important school choice case that's being reviewed in the Supreme Court. Many of the legal barriers to school choice are being taken down. You're on the board of the Catholic Education Partners, a group that educates, works with church leaders and educators on making sure that school choice laws apply to Catholic schools as well. Are Catholic educators and church leaders ready for the floodgates to be opened? Are we prepared? And if so, and if not, what do we need to do?
Well, we opened this by talking a little bit about the challenges the Catholic schools have had in the last 60 years. And when you look at, there's a lot of reasons why Catholic schools have struggled. I think the first and foremost is that Catholic schools have not clearly differentiated themselves from the public schools and other private schools in their area. And that's why they need to be authentically Catholic and really sort of double down on that. But I think the other, if I had to pick a second reason that Catholic schools have struggled, it's been a financing issue. So if you look 60 years ago, Catholic schools used to be run by nuns, pretty much. Nuns and priests and whatnot were most of the teachers. And they could get by and we could pay them like nothing or next to nothing. We can't do that anymore because we don't have as many nuns and priests as we used to have. So we have to pay lay people to teach, and we want great lay people. We want great teachers. So we now have an expense structure that is somewhat subsidized by local churches, so that helps, but it's still more expensive than it was 60, 70 years ago. So this is why school choice is such a hugely important issue, and I think should be one of the most stressed issues by pastors and other priests when they're doing their preaching and engaging with their communities. Because at the end of the day, all the parents that are going to that church but sending their kids to public school, they're doing so because it's largely free. And their property and sales tax dollars that everyone pays only allows them to send their kid to that local government-run school. In fairness, that money should follow them to whatever school they want to send their kids, whether it's another secular school or a religious school, a Catholic school. And if we can make school choice a reality across the country, this would be a boon for Catholic schools, because you'd have many parents realize the benefit of Catholic school in theory for their children. They just simply can't afford it. Mm-hmm. So if we can make that a reality, we'd be truly helping all these parents that want to send their kids to Catholic school to be able to do so. So I think we need to make this a priority.
Well, Mike, I can't agree more with you. And also, I want to add that we've seen, especially Catholic schools being a lifeline for low-income and minority students in inner-city schools, where their local schools are failing them. They, when they're able to access Catholic school education, their graduation rates are higher, their behavioral issues are better, they have more embracing more virtuous life as well, because it's being modeled to them. And so it's not just building up our church community, but it's also building up our society as well when Catholic schools can flourish, and being able to give that economic support for families to be able to choose the right fit for their children, if it's because of faith or because of what is being offered, and a better alternative, more the better.
There's a Christian school we support in DC, which is a great example of this. They serve the poorest of the poor in DC from troubled homes, and they send their kids to this school, and the kids get the love that they can only receive at a school that is faith-based. And the teachers and the head of school will pray with the kids. They'll have conversations with the kids that they would simply not allowed, they would not be allowed to have these if it was a public school. So there's a huge advantage that faith-based schools can have in reaching their students, particularly if they're in low-income families.
Amen. Amen. Well, many thanks, Mike, for joining me to discuss your interest and commitment to renewing religious freedom in education. Check out the Catholic School Playbook to learn more about Mike and Liz Ortner Family Foundation renewal of Catholic schools and their colleges and why that's a religious freedom matter. Thanks again.
Thank you, Andrea.
Many thanks to Professor Nicole Garnett and Mike Ortner for their insight and optimism. Joan and I have been so pleased to bring you this education series of Religious Freedom Matters. You can check out all the episodes at the website of the National Catholic Register. That's ncregister.com. And at the Conscience Project website. Check out the project's other work at conscience-project.org. And thanks for joining us and sharing with your friends, family, and at your church what you've heard, and that religious freedom matters.